page under Community Events. Again, that's Sunday, June 8th, from 2 until 10 p.m. at the Tryon Life Community Farm.
And you are tuned to KBOO Portland. It is 11 a.m. and it's time for Health Watch. The guest today is Dr. Jeffrey Bland. And I will let Dr. Naiman tell you about Dr. Bland. And do stay tuned at 11:30 for Madness Radio, where Erica Vanda Acker discusses her innovative counseling work with violent offenders in the Netherlands. So thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. If you're not a member, you can still become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Today's guest, Dr. Jeffrey Bland, is known as the father of functional medicine, a medical approach that focuses on the personalized prevention and treatment of chronic diseases. Over the past 35 years, he has taught more than 100,000 healthcare practitioners about functional medicine. Dr. Bland has been a professor of biochemistry, a research director at the Linus Pauling Institute of Science and Medicine, the co-founder of the Institute for Functional Medicine, and the founder president of the Personalized Lifestyle Medicine Institute. Dr. Jeffrey Bland has authored more than 100 scientific publications and 10 books. He's here today on Health Watch to talk about his latest one, The Disease Delusion: Conquering the Causes of Chronic Illness for a Healthier, Longer, and Happier Life. Welcome to Health Watch, Dr. Jeffrey Bland.
Well, Dr. Naiman, thanks so much, and it's wonderful to be on in the state of Oregon and city of Portland. I have fond memories. I was a student at the Oregon Health Sciences Institute back in the 60s, and I also graduated from the University of Oregon in Eugene with my PhD, and so I have a fond love for the state of Oregon and certainly Portland.
Well, it's great having you on Health Watch, and let's start with the title of your book, The Disease Delusion. What do you mean by the disease delusion?
Yeah, it's sounds very paradoxical and contradictory, I know, because we all know that there are diseases, so why would that be a delusion? Well, it's certainly not a delusion that we have diseases. I think the delusion that most of us carry is the origin of these diseases. We think that they're, whether it's heart disease or diabetes or dementia or cancer or arthritis, we think that they're locked into our genes, that we kind of inherit them. We didn't even fill out an application card. It just came from our biological heritage, and therefore, there's little we can do about it. We just hope that we don't get our number called. Well, that used to be the old model in the 20th century, but that's not the new model in the post-genomic age of the 21st century, because we've discovered, and when I say we, I mean collaboratively, collectively, the world scientific and medical communities have discovered that these conditions that we used to think were so genetically rooted in our heritage are really only 25 to 30% at most tied hardwired to our genes. The other 70 to 75% of their origin really relates to the messages that we send to our genes through our lifestyle, how we eat, act, think, what we consume, our environment, our social structure, meaning there's a tremendous amount of variability in how our genes ultimately will express either health or disease. And that's an exciting story because we can't change our genes, but we can certainly personalize and change our lifestyle and our habit patterns to match that of our genetic strengths and minimize that of our genetic weaknesses. So the book really talks about how we revolutionize healthcare, how we don't just talk about universally accessible healthcare, but really accessible to the right kind of healthcare that delivers to the person the ability to free themselves up from these chronic diseases that really steal from us good health and good life.
You begin the disease delusion with asking the reader to imagine the health concerns of Americans just after the Civil War, and then about to imagine the paradigm shift that happens around the turn of the century. Can you link that to what you just shared with our listeners?
Yes, thank you. At the turn of the last century, a most remarkable discovery occurred, and as you probably know, historically, the mean average life expectancy at the turn of the last century, going from the 19th to the 20th century, was about 45 to 50 years. And the major causes of death that stole from people their life were infectious diseases, the various plagues and tuberculosis, and diseases for which at that time there was no known origin. And then at the turn of the century, thanks to the work of people like Louis Pasteur and Jenner and Koch and others, it was discovered that these were communicable illnesses that were associated with little sub-microscopic organisms called bacteria. And then later we discovered viruses. So these infectious diseases, once they were understood as the origin of these dominant disease patterns, then it led into immunotherapy and immunization, and later the development of antibiotics, which was thanks to Alexander Fleming's discoveries with the Petri dish and the mold that was killing bacteria, we were able to start the modern pharmaceutical industry. And of course, these discoveries were just paradigm shifting in the 20th century. They led to a very rapid increase in mean average life expectancy because neonatal or birthing deaths were reduced, and women who are having infection after birth could be treated with antibiotics and successfully live to raise their children. And so our mean average life expectancy went up in a period of just a few decades from, say, 45 to 50 to 65 to 70. And then we got kind of high-centered in the middle of the 20th century, in which we recognized that we'd done a very good job of managing these infectious diseases, but a new family of diseases were rising up to be more prevalent. These were called the chronic diseases of aging. They included heart disease and diabetes and arthritis and cancer and musculoskeletal problems like osteoporosis. And these diseases weren't caused by a single bug. They weren't as easy to treat as was, for instance, tuberculosis. Once you understood the organism, you could treat it with an antibiotic. In this case, the diseases which we are now afflicted by required a different model, a new paradigm shift, a new breakthrough in discovery. And that discovery has happened over the last 25 years with the understanding that these are complex disorders that really relate to the way a person's own genes respond to their environment. And therefore, the concept of personalized lifestyle healthcare is emerging in the 21st century that will be as big a breakthrough in improving people's health and reducing unnecessary disease and increasing life expectancy, I believe, as was the development of infectious disease in the 20th century.
So because chronic diseases don't have a single cause and have a more complex symptom picture than acute infectious diseases, and you're arguing they require a different thinking process, a systems approach to dealing with them, and you believe that paradigm shift is going on now. But isn't it true also that most doctors right now are not operating under that new paradigm, that if you go to see your doctor for a complex chronic degenerative disease, you might still be treated with the same one-size-fits-all, one-medicine-for-one-symptom approach?
Yes, I think that is really the transition that we're undergoing right now in thinking. If we could use the model that you were asking about, the infectious disease model, if you think of what happened at the turn of the last century, when these infectious organisms were first discovered, there were a few people that were enlightened and understood about this and introduced sanitation, hygiene, and nutrition, and then later immunotherapy and finally antibiotics. And they were the kind of people that were the early adopters. They're the ones that got the benefit of this new information. For the average person in the population, however, because of the nature of how long it takes for information to translate into clinical practice in medicine, it may have been 20 years before they actually got the benefit of this new information. And so they were still being treated by the old model in medicine, which was using arsenicals and using mercurials and talking about the four humors of moist and hot and cold and dry. And these were the concepts that they held on to until there was this major kind of paradigm shift. And I think we're undergoing that same kind of transition right now with medicine. the textbooks that medical doctors are being trained from today, in the main, are out of date by the time that the student is already studying from them. The turning over of this information is so rapid. Every 3 to 5 years, we're doubling the information that relates to the understanding of the origin of these chronic diseases. And therefore, there are these enlightened members of the medical community that have had advantage to understand these concepts and are delivering it to their patients. And then there are those that are still working under the convention of what I would consider 20th century medicine, which is a pill for an ill mentality. You know, look at the symptom, treat the symptom with a specific drug to modify the symptom, but not actually treat the underlying cause. And I think this is what I'm trying to get to in the disease delusion, trying to bring to the reader's attention that these tools that can actually rid people of unnecessary chronic disease are available today. They can be implemented today. We don't have to wait for more studies. We don't have to wait for more science. We don't have to wait for more bodies of esteemed individuals to convene and ultimately proclaim these to be good ideas. They are there today. We just have to understand them and start applying them, and that's what the book is all about.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Health Watch, and we're talking today to Dr. Jeffrey Bland about his new book, The Disease Delusion, Conquering the Causes of Chronic Illness for a Healthier, Longer, and Happier Life. So Dr. Bland, why don't you speak briefly to what a systems approach is, the idea that both one underlying cause can lead to different disorders, and two people with the same disorder could have different causes to their disorder.
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. Let me use an example that came up just in the last few days in a patient that I think exemplifies this concept. So I was at a very large medical meeting that was involved with functional medicine, and I had one of the members of the Institute for Functional Medicine, a physician, come up to me and say that they had just had a very important application of this this concept of systems thinking in medicine, in which they had a patient who was developing dementia, and that patient had been to see very top-notch neurologists and really getting the best of medical treatment to treat their dementia with various medications that are available. But that there had really not been much improvement at all. In fact, if anything, there was a continued progression of dementia in this individual. So the daughter of this her father then sought out the care of a functional medicine physician and who really is trained in this whole concept of systems thinking in medicine. And in the evaluation, of course, it was still recognized that the gentleman had progressive dementia. But rather than just think of this as the brain as the origin of disease, the question is, where did it come from? What was the cause of this dementia? And not to go through all the lengthy discussion, but to cut to the chase, ultimately, it was determined that the cause of this dementia, or the loss of brain function, started actually in the intestinal tract. The intestinal tract is where more than 50% of the body's immune system is to be found, and it turned out that this person's intestinal immunity was reacting adversely to a component in their diet. That component we've heard a lot about recently is called gluten. It's a family of proteins that are found in cereal grains. And in some people, those gluten-containing grain proteins are considered a foreigner. They're considered a hostile invader. And so the immune system of the intestinal tract in those individuals can respond by going to battle, going to war, producing inflammatory substances. Those inflammatory substances may not be found solely in the intestines. They get into the blood. They travel through the blood, ultimately through a relay race through the body's immune system, and they travel to the brain, where the brain has its own immune system called the microglia. The brain's immune system is connected to the blood's immune system, which is connected to the liver's immune system, which is connected to the intestine's immune system. So they all talk together. So when the intestines are upset and producing these inflammatory materials, ultimately the brain immune system, which is the microglia, gets that message. And in this case, that gentleman was getting an inflammatory message sent to his brain through what ultimately started in the gut as a foreign reaction to gluten. So the treatment was not just to treat the brain. The treatment was to treat the gluten-induced inflammatory situation in the gut, which means a gluten-free diet, proper dietary control and reformulation. And lo and behold, over a very short period of time, a matter of just a few months, this progressive dementia that had been going on for several years turned the other way. His short-term memory improved, his recall improved, his conversational ability improved, and it was, you know, quote, according to the daughter, a miracle. Well, it really wasn't a miracle. He was just asking a different question about the origin of his dementia to get a different answer. And that's what the book, The Disease Illusion, tries to help the reader understand. How you, as a person, can ask the right questions, not just about why you have certain things, but where they came from and what you can do about it to treat the cause, not just the effect.
And so, taking that logic further, it would also be a mistake to take the lesson of that patient with dementia due to a gluten intolerance and apply that same answer to the next patient with dementia, that the next patient with dementia, the cause may be blood sugar abnormality or maybe environmental toxicity, for instance.
Thank you. That's beautifully said. And that is really the lesson of what I'm trying to get across in the book. We have certain things that we call diseases, and we assume somehow that when we can call a person or we can name a person having a certain disease, let's take type 2 diabetes as an example. So if that type 2 diabetes is seen in Mr. Jones, we make the assumption that Mrs. Smith, who has the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, must be the same in her disease as that of Mr. Jones. Well, it turns out that although we may call these diseases the same thing, the condition of Mr. Jones and Mrs. Smith, that in actual fact, they may have very, very different causes for their blood sugar problems that we call type 2 diabetes. And the treatment for Mr. Jones to manage his diabetes may be very different than the treatment for Mrs. Smith to manage her same diagnosis, type 2 diabetes. And this is the, I think, tremendous breakthrough that we're having in the 21st century. I use a little statement when I talk to doctors. They say, medicine is for real people. Statistical humans are of little interest. Now, why does that sound, you know, kind of simplistic, but maybe important? Well, most of us that go to medical school learn a lot about statistical humans, what we call 70-kilogram weight individuals, the average person. And we then develop standards of practice around treatment of these average people, as if most people given a certain drug or a certain treatment protocol will respond pretty much the same. Well, over the last 20 years, as we've learned much more about genetic diversity at the biochemical level and what are called genetic polymorphisms, it's become more recognized that there is a vast array of difference from person to person, much greater than we used to think at the cellular and physiological level. Therefore, the 21st century is the age of the individual, not the age of the average patient. It's the age of personalization. And the book really tries to help the reader through the chapters that have these various questionnaires to understand about their own unique situation, not just to be an average person, but what they are uniquely based on their genes and their response to their environment so that they can actually make the program designed to their needs, not some mythical average person.
We're talking today with Dr. Jeffrey Bland, the author of The Disease Delusion. You're listening to Health Watch. Dr. Bland, let's talk about some of the different ways that you divide the book. You divide the book into seven physiological processes, seven ways we can assess the way our body is functioning well or not functioning well to figure out what sort of treatments to put together regardless of the disease. So one of the sections is called detoxification. And it's an interesting section, partially because it's an area of medicine that I don't think most conventional doctors confront in any way. But it also shows the diversity between individuals on how well we detoxify given substances, something that we inherit genetically. One person could be very good at detoxifying caffeine, and another person might be very have a lot of trouble with caffeine, for instance.
Yeah, I think, Dr. Nyman, you're, again, really picking out some very important parts of the book that translate what I call news to use for the average reader. We have assumed that people are fairly consistent in the way they respond to environmental exposures or to various toxic substances that might be in food or water or air and or drugs. And that is about as far from the truth as one can imagine. In fact, these abilities that people have to detoxify foreign substances have now been found to vary from person to person by a factor of 1,000 in some cases, meaning, and this is, I think, a kind of a profound thing I'm going to say, that the same exposure dose of a specific drug or chemical in one person may impart a thousandfold higher activity in another person. The same level of that drug for their body may have a thousandfold different level of activity than another person based on the difference they have in their genes as to how they detoxify and eliminate that toxic substance. So when we start to talk about the yellow canary syndrome, which is, I think, a kind of an analogy. Remember the coal miners going down into the coal, taking a canary because the canary was very sensitive to carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide in the air. And when they got sick and died in the cage, the miners knew to run out very quickly. Well, there are a lot of yellow canary people who are responding to various environmental substances. It could be bisphenol A in the water. It could be various pesticide residues. It could be lead or cadmium that they get in their air or water. That may be much more sensitive, yellow canary response, based on their different detoxification systems than another individual. In fact, even within the same family, you might find SIBs or different members of the family who vary dramatically in the way they detoxify certain substances. And I think this is further made interesting because extraordinary amounts of research over the last 15 years has demonstrated that these detoxification processes, many of them, are very dependent upon certain nutrients for their activity. So if a person is nutrient-deprived or is not consuming a diet that's adequate in specific types of nutrients, that their detoxification systems may be very compromised, and that makes them even more sensitive to environmental exposures. And so when you start to put these things together, you start to recognize that maybe people who are tired, fatigued, headaches, muscle pain of unknown origin are really suffering from what I call a degree of metabolic poisoning. It's a low level of chronic poisoning because they're just not able to detoxify adequately the substances that they're being exposed to due to both their genetic uniqueness and their kinds of diets that they're on. And so the chapter that's engaged in discussing detoxification, I think it's chapter 5 in the book, really takes a person through an understanding of how are they responding to their environment? What things might they be concerned about to improve their functional detoxification ability? So I'm hopeful that will give some kind of tips and pointers that, you know, we really suffer, many of us, from this chronic underlying toxicity that truly is preventable and manageable by just asking different questions.
And we should say that all of these chapters give specific dietary supplement and exercise advice for each of these physiological processes that you end up assessing.
Yes, and I should probably mention, you know, why are these seven what we call core physiological processes? I mean, aren't there a lot more things going on in the body other than seven things? And of course there are. There are literally thousands of things going on in our body all the time. The reason that we chose these seven core physiological processes, of which detoxification is one of the seven, was that after sieving literally tens of thousands of scientific publications in the basic biomedical and medical research files over the last now 30 years, they sift down into what we consider these seven piles, seven different core physiological processes that underlie the disturbances of these seven core physiological processes underlie virtually all of the chronic diseases. So there are many variations on a theme, and there are many other processes. But it is our belief from evaluating tens of thousands of research papers over the past 30 years that these seven core physiological processes are kind of the go-to parts of the body that are the master control systems that regulate how our bodies respond to our lifestyles, our environment, and our relationships, including stress. So it's those seven in each individual chapter that we try to focus on to help a person understand where the big tuning knobs are, or let's call it the big levers are, where they can make positive changes in their health.
And Dr. Bland, even though people should be thinking about this as personalized medicine, is there a baseline diet or a baseline supplement protocol that you start from and then personalize from that place?
Yes, thank you. You know, this can sound very confusing, and I think when you get to, like any discipline, the very sophisticated levels, yes, it can be confusing. But it actually starts out quite simple, and that is a baseline dietary approach, a baseline activity or exercise approach, a baseline stress management approach. And so in chapter, I think it is 10 of the book, I try to to lay out what I consider from all the work that we've done and published in the literally, I would hate to even estimate, let's say thousands of conversations I've had with leaders in the field around the world in my 6 million miles of travel over the last 30 years, that we try to lay out a kind of let's start here. You know, let's get 80% of the problem improved by starting with a baseline diet and lifestyle program. And then in chapters 11, 12, and 13, we try to provide the nuances. Okay, now let's start personalizing it. Let's keep it simple. This is the old KISS concept, but let's start adding a little bit more sophistication that's built on a person's own individual needs. So, yes, I think, as they say, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a first step. So chapter 10 is really designed to help us make the first step, and then chapters 11, 12, and 13 to try to make those steps as efficient and effective as possible.
Could you, and we only have a couple of minutes left today, unfortunately. I wish we had another half hour, but could you touch on maybe something new that we've learned recently about exercise or diet that would pique people's interest?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about exercise, and again, because it does tie to diet. You know, there are some people who just feel so robust and so energetic after they go for a run or a long bicycle ride, and you know, for them it's the elixir of life. And there are other people who have been told that this should be their elixir of life, and when they go out, they come back and they've got sore muscles for the next 2 days. They're worn out and tired. They don't feel uplifted. So then we say, well, what's really going on? And I think it's chapter 9 of the book. I talk about this concept of bioenergetics, how you design an exercise and nutrition program to support your specific need. Not everybody is built from a genetic perspective up to be a long-distance runner or a marathon trainer. There are some people that are much better for short burst, high-energy activities, differentiating the fast twitch versus the slow twitch muscle groups. And there are various types of nutrients that help to support the bioenergetics, the conversion of food energy into muscle energy to prevent muscle pain and to gain back muscle energy and muscle strength. So I think that what we're learning about exercise physiology is, once again, the same thing we learn in nutrition. One size doesn't fit all. We have to basically understand a little bit about our genetic uniqueness, about where we are on the training cycle and our own conditioning level. And then we have to design our program specifically to meet those needs so we can walk ourselves towards to optimal health and fitness. So I think one of the things that we try to do is integrate together the concept of exercise, stress management, and nutrition built around certain indicators that we've determined over the last 20 or 30 years are very important in personalizing the program. And again, those are found in the 8 questionnaires that we've included within the book. There are questionnaires we've used in the clinic for several decades that help us to assess how that individual really needs to have their particular program designed.
And you mentioned that nutrition isn't a one-size-fits-all, and that's certainly the most controversial topic that we talk about on Health Watch with tons of contradictory guest opinions. Are there tests to figure out what an individual's diet composition should be different than the norm?
Yes, there definitely are. I think it first starts, however, before you get into complex and expensive testing, into just asking the right questions, because we can get a tremendous amount of information from just reading our bodies without any kind of laboratory testing or physiological testing, just learning how to read our bodies. And that's one of the things that I try to do in the book, is to bring some of these questions, how to read the thumbprint of our own body, or the fingerprint of our own body, before we have to start relying upon more sophisticated blood tests or physiological or physical testing. And I think there's a tremendous amount of information that's accessible very inexpensively and actually free, and can be applied immediately once a person asks the right questions. And that's what we've tried to do, is to get a person started down this road. Let's start simple. Let's start inexpensively. And as their need for increased in refinement, or if their situation is more serious in terms of their health, then we kind of ramp it up and give referrals at the back of the book to practitioners that are skilled in the art of functional medicine and other resource tools that they can use to provide whatever services they need to get the best of health.
Dr. Bland, unfortunately we're out of time, but it was great having you on Health Watch today.
Thank you, Dr. Norman. I wish you and your listeners the very best of health.
We're talking today with Dr. Jeffrey Bland, the author of The Disease Delusion. You've been listening to Health Watch. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday morning radio zine.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, Friday and Saturday, June 6th and 7th at Portland State University. The keynote speaker will be Sherry Hunkala, a national activist in anti-poverty movements and co-founder of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union and the Poor People's Economic Human Rights. This two-day conference will focus on areas of human rights, criminalization, and pathologizing of identities and experiences, revolutionary tools, and more. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What's they call free and more?
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Free 'Em All, a benefit to support political prisoners, on Saturday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Memorial Ballroom. Free 'Em All is an evening of music, dance, spoken word, and political remix, featuring David Rovex, international folk singer-songwriter, and emceed by KBOO's own Mike Crenshaw. Again, that's Free 'Em All, a benefit to support political prisoners, on Saturday, June 14th, 7 p.m. at Portland State University Smith Memorial Ballroom. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And stay tuned now to Madness Radio.